All right. So we've talked about legislation. We've talked about advocacy. All of that stuff is spearheaded through our governmental affairs committee. So next up, we're actually going to hear from several members of that committee. So I would like to, at this point, hopefully they're all here and waiting. Let's bring on Jeff Tom, Director of Governmental Affairs. Then we have Artis Bazin, who is co-chair of our Governmental Affairs Committee. I know Artis is here
You
because she
okay?
wasn't too far away.
Do you want me to make them as on the panelist side?
If they're not already, then yeah, let's go ahead and bring them over here.
Think I am.
You am.
I think so, yeah.
And then let's see, we said artists. We also have Alice Turner, who is our other co-chair of governmental affairs. And also we want to bring on Regina Brink, who has been ably serving as our deputy director of governmental affairs. So it says here, I just want to point out, it says here that Jeff Tom is in Sacramento, California, but he is not. He is coming to us tonight from Denver. Artis is from Burbank. Alice is from where did I see it? Alice is from Sunnyvale, and Regina is actually in Sacramento, I believe. So at this point, guys, let's go ahead and have you guys give your report. So welcome and thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I have been saved by Gabe from doing the introductions, which saves a couple minutes. But the one thing I did want to say before I turn it over to Alice and Artis to begin talking about some of the federal, national level advocacy that we've done is that really this, although you're only going to hear from the four of us, this is really a story of, many, many of you and all that you have done whenever, you have been called upon. And so, I'm not gonna, and neither or are my cohorts going to mention too many names, I'm sure, but know well that we really appreciate each and every one of you for the letters you write, for the work that you do. And we wouldn't be, and I don't say this lightly, we wouldn't be the undisputed number one advocacy agency for people who are blind or visually impaired in California if it were not for all of you. So with that, I want to turn it over for the first part of our program to Artis and Alice.
Okay. Well, I am first going to tell you about the four imperatives that we discussed with legislators at the ACB legislative seminar. So I'm going to briefly give the title and just a sentence about each one so you kind of get a flavor of what the advocates from California did at the ACB seminar. It was virtual again this year, so we got more participants than we would have if we had gone in person. The first imperative was the Exercise and Fitness for All Act, and that is Senate 2504 and H.R. 4756. And this would require exercise and fitness facilities to provide at least a basic level of accessibility for both equipment and instruction. The second imperative was the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act. And this was H.R. 4853. This requires the Food and Drug Administration to work on the non-visual accessibility and looking at approvals for Class 2 and Class C medical devices with visual displays to make sure that they're accessible for people with disabilities. Number 3 is the Website and Application Accessibility Act. And this would provide access for websites and applications and other online services, requiring the Department of Justice to provide that civil rights for people with disabilities occurs for online, and also provide guidance for website and application and other online services must be accessible for all. Number 4 is the Communication and Video Accessibility Amendments Act. And this would make the FCC ensure that everyone could receive audio description content from their local broadcasters utilizing technology that is already required for emergency alerts for people, and also make sure that content requirements are modernized to reflect the ever-changing accessible internet protocols for online delivery for video content, because we're doing a lot more streaming nowadays. I wanted to let you all know that we did have 27 participants from California that participated in the legislative seminar. And we had 15 teams that actually met with legislators during the conference. And so that took a lot of time and effort by a lot of people to make sure that we talked to every legislator in California. And we even had to pull in a couple people that weren't really participants, but in order to get to talk to some of the legislators that would only talk to us if we had a constituent in our midst. So I want to thank all of you for that participation, because we really appreciated everyone's activity. Now I'm going to turn it over to Alice.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you, Artis. And as Artis mentioned, we could not do the legislative activity that we do at the national level, nor at the local level, without the help of everyone. So just a word of thanks and praise to Government Affairs Committee members, to our many legislative liaisons, and then, as Artis mentioned, for the members who jumped in and joined in to participate in having these meetings with their Congress. So some feedback that we received from individuals who participated in this is that first and foremost, many of them said that the training that the Government Affairs Committee planned to help people to learn about the imperatives, to practice speaking about them, and then also to troubleshoot some of the challenges with making appointments, so that the training that we provided was considered very valuable. The legislative and leadership seminar workshop that provided very detailed information about the imperatives and how to approach it was also valued as very high. Some of the challenges, and Artis referred to it, is that in making appointments, it's becoming more and more challenging in this virtual arena. The good news is that we have more participation. The bad news is that we're really chasing down these staffers to be able to hold meetings with them. And one of those barriers that is becoming more and more prevalent is that a congressperson needs to have a constituent in the actual meetings. So in the future, we may reach out to folks based on where you live to participate in this meeting. You don't need to speak. You can learn. But that way, the meetings can go forward. And another just word of praise to the members who came in new this year to jump in and learn the process. And secondarily, for the people that come back and do this every year for us, we have some champions, artists being one of them, and many others who come back and do this for us time and time again. And we know it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. But the most important thing is, as Jeff mentioned, we are known as the premier advocate for issues in the state of California and beyond. And we do that because of your work and your involvement. So that's some of the feedback. Next year, we don't know if it's going to be virtual, in-person, or hybrid. But what we do know is that we will be showing up once again and voicing our concerns and discussing the imperatives. So thanks to all. I'm going to turn it over to Jeff now, who's going to switch our focus to informing us about some of the legislative imperatives or actions and bills that are going on. So back to you, Jeff.
Okay, thank you, Alice. So AB 371 would be extremely fascinating if it wasn't for the fact that it's so serious. But I'll make it fascinating anyway as well. As many of you know, AB 371 is a bill that we are sponsoring through Assembly Member Reginald Jones Sawyer. And I want to thank Mitch Pomerantz again for the original contact with Mr. Sawyer in years gone by. And this bill would require companies who rent scooters that you see all over our sidewalks nowadays, these e-scooters, to have insurance. And of course, it could be paid for and should be paid for by the scooter renters, but there would have to be insurance for accidents in which a pedestrian was injured or suffered property damage. So it stalled last August. And it's kind of interesting. One of the practices that I've always tried to do, as have others before me, Mitch and others, is I always try to, you know, pull the Governmental Affairs Committee as best I can through email most of the time. But every once in a while, you come upon a situation that is, we have to have your answer. We have to have it now. And if you, whatever you tell us. And that's what happened with Gabe and I last August. And they wanted to basically say, okay, we'll let your bill pass, but you're going to have to make it an optional bill and nobody's going to have to do anything. And Gabe and I said, look, our members would not stand for that. And so the bill stalled, but we have another year and it hasn't gone anywhere. And we've discovered some things. And with some help from Gene Lozano, who's been on some of our calls as well, we discovered that there are a couple places in Europe that have mandated some insurance for these e-scooters, and in the city of Cincinnati. So we'll probably have a hearing on this bill. It could be June. It could be July. It doesn't have a deadline until roughly August. So, you know, we don't have too many hurdles left since it's already passed its first house. It's in the Senate now. And we may end up having to bite the bullet on some things, including much lower dollar amounts of insurance than we have currently. We currently, I think, have $100,000 for each incident. And I think it's $500,000, if I recall what it was a year ago, for total. And we may have to bring that way down. But I think we have a real shot getting this passed. We will certainly call upon you to get those letters in when the time comes. And it's going to be coming up here pretty soon. So, and we're going to concentrate also on something that from the very beginning, Gene Lozano was demanding very loudly and very adamantly, and that is data collection on these incidents so that we have the data that shows that it's a real problem. So we still have some hurdles to climb, but we are more hopeful than we were, say, last August anyway. Okay, let me turn to our second of our three bills, and that is AB 1999. AB 1999 would require, through the use of Medicaid money, Medi-Cal, I should say. I'm dealing with so much national advocacy, I forget to use my own state's program that I've worked on for 40 years. I don't know where I'm, what's going on here. Anyway, it would use Medi-Cal money to establish at least six pilot mental health projects in at least six counties for specialized mental health services for people with vision loss. It passed its committee on consent, its policy committee, Assembly Health. It's now in Assembly Appropriations Committee, and we don't know what will happen. A lot of that work, and we have another bill that you'll hear about in a minute that's also in that committee. A lot of that work happens behind closed doors, and then they come out with their votes. So we'll see what happens. And if it does pass, the goal would be for the departments to ask in next year's budget for money to establish these pilot programs. So you're probably looking at getting these programs off the ground late in 2023 or early in 2024. That's sort of the goal. And I'm going to turn it over to discuss the other bill. I just should mention, we do have in this, not with respect to this bill necessarily, but we do have a panel on Saturday morning that Alice and I are help to facilitate, and on mental health. And I think it's just such a serious issue for our population. I hope as many of you as possible can listen to our panel at 10 o'clock on Saturday. With that, I want to turn it over to Alice for our third CCB-sponsored bill.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Our next bill is titled AB, 2480. And this bill was introduced by Assemblyman Arambula. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. And the title of the bill is Rehabilitation Services for Persons with Low Vision. And this has also recently passed by consent in April, and it's set for appropriations after that. And this is near and dear to all of us, I think. And what this bill is designed to do is to establish a pilot program in at least six counties for individuals to be able to receive the necessary services to prevent them from going into nursing homes, or to get folks who are in nursing homes simply because of vision loss the necessary skills and capabilities that they need to live in their own homes and live independently. The bill also establishes some criteria as far as the number of pilot programs that can be run in the different counties, and it is needs to be in both rural and also city or urban settings. What the bill is charged with is to let the Department of Rehabilitation know that this pilot program needs to be run and monitored. And the services are delivered, as they are now, in many cases, by agencies who provide services, so that these agencies would have a pilot program, deliver services such as technology, daily living skills, orientation and mobility, adapting to vision loss from the emotional point of view, and to then keep this data and be able to provide a report on the outcomes of providing this bill through the pilot, these services through the pilot program, and then also to keep data on outreach and any challenges. So we know that we've been missing individuals because they haven't been slotted into those slots for the Department of Rehabilitation. And people who are new to vision loss need these programs as soon as they are experiencing significant vision loss. So we're 100% behind this bill, and it's set for the next committee as far as appropriations. So back to you, Jeff.
Okay, so now I'm going to turn it over to person who, without whose assistance, I wouldn't get anything done, I don't think. And that is Regina Brink. So, Regina.
Thank you, Jeff. So, related to one of our resolutions, which was tracking of law enforcement for victims who have disabilities, there is actually a bill. And this goes to the collaboration that we can do with other organizations and how that pays off. So what CCB did was sign on to a letter for AB 1947, and that's called Hate Crimes Against People with Disabilities. And what it mainly does is track. And that's important because if someone has a disability and is a victim of a crime, we don't know if it's a hate crime against their disability status if it's not reported anywhere. And that's what's happening now. So what this bill simply says is if there is a person who is a victim of a crime, that their disability is also recorded so that it can be investigated as a possible hate crime. That doesn't mean it is one, but at least it's getting to the meat of that, that if their disability played any part in it, that would be something that law enforcement could investigate because they would have the data. So data collection again. And then our drug resolution, we have contacted people on the health committee and had very positive responses, but no substantial movement on it. I think from what we have concluded is there's some resistance because some interests, you know, are big, like the pharmaceutical industry. But we're not giving up, and we're going to keep at that because we'll find the right person, we think, to bring this drug resolution forward. And what that would do is to more standardize the accessible prescriptions and to make sure that those accessible prescription strategies and devices are available in rural areas and at small neighborhood pharmacies, because some of the major ones have them. But the other thing is consistency, so that they're consistently delivered and you don't, if you change pharmacies because you move or you change insurance, you don't have to get everything all brand new to identify your medicine. And the last thing is SSI. We're still working with the SSI Coalition, which is actually very active and growing. And we have a good thing to report there. It looks as though there was a restoration of funds for SSI recipients that lost them about 11 years ago. And those funds, it was supposed to be half in 2022 and half in 2024. Well, there's a surplus again in California. And so the coalition argued that why couldn't there be a one-time expense to bring us, you know, people on SSI, have that restored the other half in 2023. It would be a one-time expense. And that's what they're looking for with this surplus. So that was agreed to in the assembly and the Senate. And then we have heard that it will be coming out in the governor's budget. We have his revise. So I've yet to see, but that's what they're seeing, along with some kind of Golden State stimulus because of high gas and food prices. And this would include people who are low income and people that are on SSI. So again, working with other organizations, this coalition, we can get a lot done for our members. I want to thank you guys. There will be hearings May 18th and 19th on the SSI initiatives. And so check your email. You'll be getting details about that. And I'll turn it back to you, Jeff.
Okay, and finally, our final bill, before I conclude with a couple of words, will be artists on voting.
Yes, I'm going to tell you a little bit about SB 1480. It's the remote return of the ballot. Currently in California, people with disabilities can receive their ballot online and they can mark it using their specific device, but they have to print it and then either mail it in or bring it to their local polling site. This causes some issues because not everyone has a printer and it might be difficult to find someone that they could borrow their printer or go to the library or other access points. The other thing is that you need transportation to go to your poll or to mail a letter. You also have to be able to sign the envelope. And sometimes it's difficult to find the exact place to sign it and be able to tell if your pen was writing so that you make sure it's counted. So this bill is asking that you can do a remote return. Right now, military and overseas voters do return their ballot remotely. Although they do it by a less secure system, they actually fax them in. And well, this one is requiring a secure remote system. And there are two or three companies that do it, and they have undergone some real security testing to make sure that they're secure for everyone. It did just go through the committee for, I just lost the word.
Elections and reapportionment, it is something like that.
No, that one dealing with money.
Appropriations. It has appropriations. Not passed. It's like everything else. It gets, whenever there's a cost, they hold them up and then they sort of go behind closed doors and decide how they're going to vote, and then they sort of announce what they're going to do. So we don't know. But one, even though it has a lot of opposition from the anti-e-voting factions, Microsoft endorsed it, which was interesting and very positive, I think, in terms of the, you know, e-ballot return, you know, issue. And it's kind of interesting. Democracy Live has noted that they're using the same software that the NSA and CIA use, apparently. So it's not like this is unsecure software that they're using. But we'll see what happens. So, oh, and I wanted to, before we forget on this, Artis, I wanted Democracy Live was... as you know, and you publicized, thank you, for us, was willing to send students up to our policy committee. And there were like three students from CCB from Santa Clara County. And I wanted to, you know, congratulate them who came up and testified in Sacramento. So that was great. I wanted to call that out. So
you guys did not say who the author of that bill was.
Yes, that is, oh gosh, I'm blanking out.
Glazer.
Oh, yes, it's Glazer, his Mr. President's Senator.
I was going to say, it was my senator. Yes. That's why I wanted to make sure to point that
out. Now, I don't know what will happen to it once it gets into the assembly, because the assembly committee chair is the same one that refused to carry our bill last year, so on the same issue. So we'll see what happens on the other side of the aisle. But and I just, before we open up for questions, I just like to acknowledge, you know, we have people doing so many things, you know, Chris Fedrick along with Mitch and Sarah on the Blind Advisory Committee, and people on the local level in all sorts of cities doing transportation and housing and emergency disaster assistance and things like that. And, you know, too many for me to mention, but, you know, I just want to thank everybody for all that you do. So I don't know if we have time for questions, Gabe, or not.
Well, yeah, no, we've got probably a good 20 to 25 minutes if you guys wanted to take worth of questions. I believe we have until about 9 o'clock, and we're only at about 8:30 now.
And is there anything we didn't cover, ladies, that that we might have missed? If you,
I can't think of anything. Everything that was on our list.
No, I think we did too.
Is there anything not on your list you want to talk about?
Ruth Ann has her hand raised.
I don't know. I got a note that I could speak. Is that proper?
Ruth Ann, you sound a lot like Bob tonight.
Yeah.
It is. It is I. Well, they yelled at me I should speak, so I never shut up either. I think the governmental affairs is doing a fantastic job, and we want to first thank you for your leadership, and we appreciate this so much. 1480, I'm not sure I got all this. I was saddened to note that Democracy, why is it, was presented on a Saturday, 7 members there. Voting is precious, guys. Voting is precious. And I was worried first that they were going to eliminate talking machines. Jeff Tom assures me that the law protects them here. And in Washington state, they practically have wiped out talking machines. Mm. Very few voting centers. I want to keep them in all the voting centers, artists. So you're the one who started this, and we appreciate it. My question is, and please forgive me if I'm wrong, 1480, they say that they also have to count the votes and put our votes on another ballot, that doing it in print, because it's not the print ballot, that when it gets to the portal or whatever, and I don't even know what I'm saying, they'll have to count the votes and put them on a ballot. Have you heard that? And do we like it? I don't know. Thank you.
Artis, you want to?
It depends on the county, how they're doing it.
Okay.
But what they basically do is they take the barcode, and then they have to print the ballot from the barcode, because it's coming through electronically. So obviously that's not paper. So it has to be put on paper. So there's a barcode on your ballot, which shows what you've been voting. And that happens, you know, anytime they have to, you know, take something off a barcode, then they print it. So there's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
okay. Thank you.
You know, it's electronic and has to go to paper.
It's really closer to a ballot. It would be closer to a ballot if 1480 passes than it is now. Right now, yes. When you send in that piece of paper, it means nothing. Your county elected official has to convert that paper into a ballot. So this would be closer to a ballot, actually.
Hey, Deborah Armstrong, you can unmute.
All right. Good evening. You know, when I first got started with advocacy, I actually had to take a political science course so I could understand, okay, who's the Senate, who's the Congress, who's local, who's statewide, who's national. We really need a political science 101 seminar. Can you guys do something like this for the average member so they don't have to go take a college course to learn how to be a good advocate? I will go back on mute now.
You know, Debbie, back in the day before I was president, when Kathy Skivers was still president, and even a little bit while during my earlier years in it, I did those seminars in various places around the state, and I thoroughly enjoyed them. And I know people, and I enjoyed them because other people enjoyed them. So I would definitely like to do those again. I haven't forgotten everything I learned working for the legislature all that time. And I'd be happy to do those. And as we come out of Zoom, maybe I'll try and do a few and actually do a couple in person as well as through Zoom. It's a very good idea. And now I've got some assistants to help me out, too.
Right.
And with technology, we can do it and make it available in podcast form, which would be valuable.
And also written forms. There are, written examples telling about the process and all that kind of thing, too. So.
Good question. Good idea, though.
There are no more hands raised. Whoops. You know that happens.
Just as soon as you say no more hands.
ending in 650, you may unmute and speak.
Hi, this is Linda Johnson, and I just have to say I'm really proud of the work that you all are doing. And I know I haven't been as involved, you know, with supporting different bills and such, but I've been asked a couple times to support certain bills and certain agendas. Like one was for voting, like what you're talking about. I was one of the first blind Californians to vote, electronically. And then I was asked to work on the AB 1999. And I just really, really appreciate the work you're doing. And I think it means a lot to me, too, that you've actually reached out to me, because I probably would have not, done this on my own. So thank you very much for doing that reach out. I think it's really important work that you're all doing and we're all doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. That means a lot. Linda is just a fantastic person, and hopefully as many of you as possible can hear from her on Saturday on our panel.
Thanks.
And I also think it's a great example of the fact that in our membership, we have individuals who have areas of expertise far and wide. And that's the richness of our membership. And so when Jeff or Regina or anyone calls upon someone in your area of expertise, that just makes our team bigger, broader, and better.
It does. And I want to recognize Keith Mendelson for helping on the drug resolution. He's been invaluable on that.
Linda Perel has her hand up.
Hi, everyone. Thank you. You guys are doing a fantastic job. All right, voiceover, be quiet. My question is, considering all of the flurry, the constant drumbeat about voter fraud and voter suppression throughout the country, I'm concerned about making sure that we don't contribute in any way to setting up any system that would be vulnerable to hacking and tampering by forces who would wish us harm.
I don't think we need to worry about that, because they have strict national certification standards, and also the state has strict standards. And I believe, I know Democracy Live! Has done demonstrations for the Secretary of State's office. I'm not sure about the other system, but they've been proven in lots of different jurisdictions across the country to be secure, and they've never had a problem at all. And like Jeff said, they're actually using some of the same security that is used by NSA and the CIA. So it's been very well tested and to be totally safe.
One other comment, Linda, to address. I'm sorry, Artist. The other thing I would say is that this bill does not, in a way, unfortunately, but it does not require online ballot return. It allows the Secretary of State, if she, since it is a she, it's Shirley Weber, feels that a system can be securely certified to therefore certify online ballot return. So, I mean, if you can do it in a bank, and if you could do it in every other part of your daily life, you know, what's not to say you shouldn't be able to do it with voting. And if we allow, and many other states allow, overseas and veteran voters to do it, why should not voters with disabilities do it? I mean, we're always going to have those opponents. They're going to be out there for some good reasons and some bad ones. And, you know, but we have to assert our rights no matter what, it seems to me. So, you know.
Yeah. Do you think we'll ever get to the place, though, where there are no more paper ballots, where everyone is, all of the voting is electronic?
Yeah, someday.
Maybe. But right now they're going to scan it and turn it into a ballot.
Yeah, so I want to keep that. I'm in favor of keeping that.
I mean, in 20 or 30 years, are they going to still, it's so much cheaper. And counties, that you know why we have vote by mail, don't you? We have it for one reason. It's because counties find it cheaper. Yeah. And so ultimately,
and people aren't volunteering to do poll working anymore.
That's right. Well, that too. But the biggest reason is it's cheaper. And, you know, when eventually, as life becomes more and more e-centered, voting will too, whether it's 10 years or 30 years, I don't know when that'll be, but it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
There are no more hands.
I should say that Disability Rights California has really been helping us in this effort too, because they are really pro this remote return bill as well.
Well, they actually are the sponsor of the bill in this case.
Yes.
Right. But we are working closely with them.
Yeah.
Yes. We are. The advantage of this too is it helps people with other disabilities, not just print or visual. Low vision and people that are blind, so, or print disabilities, it helps people with other disabilities.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much for your questions, for your attention, and for your advocacy. Anyone else have final words?
Vida.
We have Vida.
Oh. Yeah, Vida. I thought.
Hello, Vida.
Vida, you can unmute. I sent it to you. There.
Good evening, everyone.
Vida.
Thank you for all the amazing work you're doing. Wow. So I had a question, Artis. The bill that you talked about with medical devices, and you mentioned specifically class 2 and class 3 devices. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to us what that means?
Well, they're mostly devices that deal with like diabetes, heart things, kidney things. And I don't know why, I don't know what class 1 is, but I know that there are particularly ones with visual displays.
Yeah, class 1 is more like thermometers and things like that. So class B and C have, I think it's A, B, and C, actually. And they have to do with the more advanced medical devices, like things that monitor your blood sugar, your heart, your, as you said, your blood mm-hmm. pressure, that kind of thing. But, yeah, right. But thermometer, a stethoscope, that kind of thing is A.
Okay,
and
thank you.
Christy is listening on this bill, which is why I'm saying it. I have an email from you that I know I need to deal with, but I have to really wait till I get back to work on it. So, on with respect to this 4853.
One of the hazards of being a world traveler.
Now there's no more hands.
No more? All right. Well, do you guys have any other closing thoughts?
I just want to thank everybody that supports the Governmental Affairs Committee. Jeff is right. We couldn't do it without you in those letters, those comments. everything that you guys do makes it possible for us to advocate, because the more voices they hear, the more it gives lends credibility to what we're saying.
Definitely. Thank you.
I want to say thank you to all of you guys, to Artis and Alice, for ably co-chairing the Governmental Affairs Committee. There's several more people than what we're hearing tonight that are on that committee. And to Jeff and Regina, you guys are boots on the ground, so to speak, of going to the Capitol, making those visits and testifying. So thank you to all of you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, since we've got a couple of minutes here, Lisa, what do you say we do another door prize?
I'm with it. Let's do it. So we have another $25 Amazon gift card donated by ACB Capital Chapter. Let's get the wheel spinning. And the winner is Joe Smith.
Hey.
All right, Joe.
A Capital Chapter member.
That's right.
And we're visiting or receiving from all of my current and or past chapters that I've belonged to. So,
and a former bowler with the president, isn't that correct? And he used to bowl with you many moons ago.
I honestly don't know if he and I ever bowled together.
Okay, all right.
We might have just missed each other on that one.
You might have.
So, but congratulations to Joe.